On the 250th anniversary of the birth of Ludwig van Beethoven, I, Patricia Salomone, present Beethoven, His Life and Times, with the assistance of my friend Gerald Fennec for the musical content. Like many intellectuals of his time, Beethoven was fascinated by the figure of Napoleon Bonaparte, the corporal from Corsica, who had risen to embody the precepts of the French Revolution and crossed Europe at the head of his enthusiastic army to take abroad belief in the freedom and the brotherhood of mankind. Beethoven was deeply disillusioned when power blinded the champion who had crowned himself emperor. While as a young man, Beethoven had seen Bonaparte as spreading the egalitarian and secular ideal of the French Revolution, the Bonaparte who in July 1801 agreed with Pope Pius VII to reverse the decree that church and state should be separate entities caused great confusion and was to him and to many others a great disappointment. James Hamilton Patterson, in his book Sinfonia Eroica, tells us, "There is a reason to suspect Beethoven had considerably revised the revolutionary enthusiasms he had nurtured in his 20s, and he had probably already put his plans to move to Paris on hold on account of music commitments in Vienna. Seeing that Napoleon's power was spreading and that after his victory at Marengo, Austria made humiliating territorial concessions and Emperor Francis II had signed the Treaty of Lunéville, people became aware that Napoleon was a force to be reckoned with. In fact, Beethoven's friends encouraged him to dedicate a piece to him. But by now Beethoven would have none of it. On the 8th of April 1802, he wrote to his friends, 'At the time of the revolutionary fever it might have been worth a thought, but now that everything is trying to get back into the old rut and Bonaparte has made his concordat with the Pope, ha ha ha, count me out.'" Again we read, "The French army had long been in possession of his beloved birthplace, Bonn. So on whose side should our musician be?" Beethoven was by no means alone in facing this quandary. It was shared by half of Europe's intellectuals. Thank you. thus the Eroica, new, avant-garde and breaking with the form of the classical Viennese symphony, which had previously been presented in the salon of Beethoven's sponsor, Prince Lobkowitz, with a dedication to Napoleon, was presented publicly in Vienna in 1805, dedicated instead to Prince Lobkowitz himself. Ludwig van Beethoven was making a name for himself as a composer. His virtuoso piano playing had been to him but a means for survival in Vienna, a presentation ticket to his sponsors. As a young man, Beethoven had met Mozart during his first brief visit in Vienna, although, as we have seen, it is not quite certain whether he had had some study sessions with the great master. During his second visit to the Empire's capital, which was to be his permanent home, he had studied under Haydn. And when Haydn left Vienna for London in 1794, Beethoven turned to Johann Georg Albertsberger for instruction in counterpoint. Also, amongst his teachers was Mozart's avowed rival, Antonio Salieri, court kapellmeister. The music world was endowed with an abundance of musicians who were to leave their mark on music and on history itself. Although it was as composer that Beethoven wanted to be remembered in the history of music, the development of the pianoforte as an instrument was important to him. In fact, he was a precursor of what had to become the perfectly developed instrument of today.
Unlike its predecessor, the harpsichord, the piano was able to transmit a far wider spectrum of dynamics, musical colors, and emotions. Beethoven and the piano were made for each other. Of course, the great Mozart had already taken to the piano with alacrity and had performed on the instrument regularly since the late 1770s. However, if Beethoven is to be believed, Mozart played the piano like a harpsichord, suggesting minimal use of the pedals, limited dynamic contrast, and even a restrictive, expressive palette. Whether or not Beethoven's description is wholly accurate, Mozart only loved the piano. For Beethoven, however, it meant more. The new capabilities provided by the piano mirrored and gave expression to Beethoven's extraordinary creative impulses and his need to break away from the confining musical conventions of the 18th century. In turn, Beethoven became one of Europe's most important pianist composers, at the very time the piano needed champions to further legitimize its claims to ascendancy. The combination of piano and orchestra provided Beethoven great scope for presenting and developing ideas. It could enact conflicts and reconciliations between soloist and orchestra, and it made overall sound more imposing, more vibrant, and more varied. Furthermore, in his piano concertos as elsewhere, Beethoven reveals himself as pathologically incapable of being predictable and formulaic. From the gently mode-breaking first and second concertos, through the tragic seriousness of the third, and the often limpid beauty of number four, and sublimity of the Emperor, together the concertos form a series of richly contrasted sound worlds, each of which makes gloriously manifest Beethoven's very special relationship with the piano.
The idea of moving to Paris gradually evaporated, and this was also due to the fact that his patrons in Vienna offered him a fixed salary on condition that he committed to remain in the capital of the empire. Another important factor affecting his decision was the big tragedy in Beethoven's life, his gradually advancing deafness. Beethoven suffered from various health problems throughout his life, but being a musician, it was his deafness that caused him most anguish. His deafness has been written about over and again. So tragically was it taken by the man himself that discussing it would require more than a program of this series. Deafness affected Beethoven's musical output, at times positively, at times negatively. It had a devastating effect on his private life. Beethoven had become aware of the problem when he was in his mid-twenties, at the peak of his career as a pianist. but it was not until June 1800 that he decided to reveal the secret, for which he had a sense of guilt, to his friend Karl Armenda. He also revealed this intimate secret to his childhood friend Franz Spengler, who had in the meantime become a medical doctor. How pathetic, sensitive and sad are the words taken from his letter to Dr. Wengler, who had, in the meantime, married one of the von Brüning girls. My ears continue to hum and buzz day and night. I must confess that I lead a miserable life. For almost 2 years I have ceased to attend any social function, simply because I find it impossible to say to people, "I am deaf." In my profession it is a terrible handicap. Heaven alone knows what is to become of me. After multiple attempts, some of them quite absurd, by several doctors at curing his deafness, one doctor, Johann Adam Schmidt, suggested that Beethoven left the busy, dusty, noisy streets of Vienna and retreated to the amenable surroundings of Heiligenstadt. Here Dr. Schmidt had a friend who owned a small cottage for rent. The village was known for its warm springs, its hills, and peaceful surroundings. So the summer of 1802 was spent in Heiligenstadt, where the pleasant countryside and the warm springs were at least beneficial, if not to his hearing problem, to Beethoven's health in general. One of his favorite pastimes, in fact, was taking long walks along the country lanes. On one occasion, as he strolled in the company of his friend and secretary Rice, his friend drew his attention to a young lad playing on a flute. But try as he did, Beethoven could not hear the sweet sound. It brought home the fact that the quiet isolation of Heiligenstadt was to no avail as a solution to his problem. He had come here early in the summer in the hope of some improvement in his hearing, but the buzzing in his ears continued, and by the autumn he was quite desperate. The state of mind brought him to write what will be known as the Heiligenstadt Testament. Thank you. We are told by John Suchet that this extraordinary document is, for biographers, scholars, musicologists, indeed for any lover of Beethoven's music who want to understand him better, the single most important piece of writing he ever produced that was not in the form of musical notes. The Heiligenstadt Testament is written in the form of a letter to his two younger brothers. It is a cri de coeur written at the end of a six-month period spent in the countryside. With some excerpts from the Heiligenstadt letter, we will come to the end of this episode. Heiligenstadt, 6th October, 1802. For my brothers. Oh, all you people who think and say that I am hostile to you, or that I am stubborn, or that I hate mankind, you do not realize the wrong that you do me. You do not know the secret cause of my seeming that way. For the last 6 years I have suffered from a terrible condition, yet hoping from 1 year to the next that it would improve, but finally realizing that I would have to face the prospect of a lasting malady. Born with an ardent and lively temperament, I had to cut myself off from society. How could I possibly explain that I was deficient in the one sense that should have been more highly developed in me than in anyone? So forgive me when you see me shrink back, although I really want to mingle with you. For me, there is no enjoyment in other man's company, no stimulating conversation or exchange of ideas. I must be totally alone. I must live like an exile. Never mentioning God or Christ, Beethoven appeals dramatically to the Divine One and continues, "You alone can see into my innermost soul. You understand me and know that I love my fellow men and want only to do good." He then nominates his two brothers as the heirs of "My Small Fortune." He recommends his brothers to share his fortune fairly, to teach their children virtue. "For it was virtue which lifted me up when I was wretched. I owe it to virtue and to my art that I did not end up my own life." He ends this important document thanking his friends and Professor Schmidt, his doctor. He especially thanks his sponsor, Prince Lichnowsky, and donates the instruments that his mentor had regaled him with to his two brothers. This document, which has all the connotations of a will, was written when Beethoven was 31 years old. Dramatic as it is, and pessimistic as it may seem, it actually marked a cathartic change in his life. About this, we shall talk in the next episode of Beethoven, His Life and Times.